Today on Wings. It took 21 meetings of the world's nations to arrive at the Paris Agreement on climate change. The 22nd meeting, held in Morocco, began November 7, 2016. Election Day in the United States. An American youth delegation stayed up all the first night to draft a banner.
These are our demands that we had crafted for our new president. And now we know, because our president is now Donald Trump, we know that this is no longer a presidential to-do list. This is a people's to-do list. Woo! All of our demands here are now the work of our movements, because we know that Donald Trump is not going to work for climate justice. Donald Trump doesn't believe that climate change exists.
Not only these youths, but people around the world are addressing climate change irregardless of U.S. leadership. Today on Wings, you'll hear from some of the women.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I'm Gráinne Delaney for Wings, and those were the sounds of the March for Climate Justice in November 2016 in Marrakech, Morocco. The march was part of COP22, or the 22nd meeting of Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. COP21, held in Paris, France, created the Paris Accord, a roadmap to coordinated actions to reduce greenhouse gases. The 2016 COP22 created a 3-year plan to implement the Paris Accord. But the clear underlying message was one of a call to mobilise and act locally. In recognition of the need to engage communities, climateradio.net launched to make news, debates and interviews from COP22 available in 18 different countries and 5 different languages. All of the features and interviews in this programme were conducted and presented by Nagira Laila from Mama FM in Uganda, a project of the Uganda Media Women's Association. In the following, Laila interviews Irena Bakova, UNESCO Director General, on COP22, education, action and the need for community radio.
Very, very privileged to host the Director General of UNESCO, Miss Irena Bakova, in studios right now. Madam, thank you so much for giving us your time and coming to this interview. We want to ask you a few questions.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I do believe that community radios, which is a partner of UNESCO for a very long time, play an important role. They're very close to the people, they're close to different communities, and the message that we could pass through the community radio nowadays is becoming ever more important.
What is the role of UNESCO in COP22 in particular?
UNESCO has been mobilized to support the government of Morocco, the presidency of the COP22, because we believe it's time to act. COP21 in Paris concluded the Paris Agreement, an important achievement of the world leaders. Now we have to act. And this is where the importance of COP22 is. What we have done this morning, we have opened a whole day about education for climate, education for sustainable development, raising awareness. We're talking about the role of the sciences, the oceans, of indigenous knowledge, of the knowledge of local communities, of intangible heritage, with another major event, the Minister of Crafts, Social Inclusion and Solidarity of Morocco. And through the power of the sciences through the power of the local knowledge and of the people, through partnerships with the private sector, with the civil society. I think we can move to this very important next stage. After the adoption of the important agreement, we just have to act. There is no time to lose.
Here is Laila interviewing UN Women Deputy Executive Director Lakshmi Puri in a live broadcast.
I prefer you start with telling us some specific challenges women are facing in line of climate change.
Climate change is a global tragedy, and women are very much a part of that tragedy. They are suffering, they are carrying the burden, they are being affected adversely by the change in weather patterns, by the extreme weather events, drought, floods, storms, typhoons, cyclones, everything that has been caused by climate. It affects women and girls disproportionately and differentially. And it also worsens the inequality, discrimination, poverty, and violence that so many millions of women in developing countries live under. So we really need to make sure that that is taken into consideration. Their needs, their vulnerabilities, their interests and priorities need to be taken into consideration when we are looking at climate action and response and climate proofing of everything we do. On the other hand, we know that women and girls are in the forefront of responding to climate change, whether it is through afforestation measures that they take, through the conservation of water, or through the protection and promotion of traditional knowledge. They are really in the front lines. So their voice, participation, and leadership needs to be recognized, and they need to be supported, and they need to be invested in by the international community. That is why it is so important that when the world gets together, as it did in Paris, to agree on a climate agreement, a climate treaty, they also, for the first time, recognized that they should respect and promote their gender equality obligations, gender equality and women's empowerment obligations whilst taking climate action. That was a breakthrough. And the genie was out of the bottle. And now there's no stopping it. And the Paris Agreement also talked about gender responsive adaptation and also about gender responsive capacity building, which means that you have to take into account the special situation and needs of women and girls, but also you have to also make them participants and leaders in climate action. This Marrakesh meeting is about to record another milestone.
Yeah.
And we are so happy that under the leadership of Morocco and all the member states, we are now going to be adopting a milestone agreement on a three-year work program, an enhanced and strengthened work program on gender and climate change. This work program now covers not only adaptation but mitigation. This is really important, because earlier it was only adaptation. Now mitigation It covers finance, gender-responsive finance. That means dedicated finance for gender equality and women's empowerment-related programs. It covers transfer of technology and development of technology that is suited and supporting women. It covers loss and damage, and it establishes accountability of all the bodies of the UNFCCC to report on how this is being implemented. And this includes the Green Climate Fund and the GEF, which have not yet, even though, for example, Green Climate Fund has provisions on gender-sensitive financing, it is not supporting enough women's programs and women issues, and also women's organizations. I think it's really important that women's grassroots organizations are supported, because that's where they are really, they are the climate warriors.
UN Women Deputy Executive Director Lakshmi Puri was interviewed by Nagira Laila for climateradio.net at COP22 in Marrakesh, Morocco. It is clear from Puri that a huge range of efforts will be needed to get to grips with the impact of climate change on women and girls. In this next feature, Laila speaks to Namata Rosette, a young farmer in Uganda, one of the climate warriors who is quietly trying to safeguard her farm and livelihood through adaptation to the climate changes in her environment.
Agriculture accounts for over 40% of Uganda's gross domestic product and employs 80% of the labor force. Farming in Uganda is primarily rain-fed, making it vulnerable to drought. Majority of the labor force are women who depend on subsistence agriculture for their livelihoods. The effects of higher average temperatures and more frequent and severe climate changes in Uganda are being seen primarily in the reduction in food security, decline in the quantity and quality of water, degradation of ecosystems, and negative impacts on health, settlements, and infrastructure. Uganda has diverse climates, types of soil, and farming techniques that farmers are applying. There are two periods of rain and two shorter dry seasons. Farmers have worked with these conditions for their entire lives and learned from generations before them how to best farm in these conditions. However, this has changed due to climate changes, and farmers no longer follow the weather pattern to begin farming in their gardens.
My name is Namata Rosette. I live in Namgongo. I'm 21 years old. I've spent 1 year in farming. When I left school, I realized that looking for a job is not easy. So I decided to start farming. I'm engaged in poultry and vegetable growing. I grow cabbages, sukuma wiki, nakati, and in poultry, I have broilers and broilers for meat. The reason why I practice vegetable growing is that vegetables grow very fast, and the market is readily available than growing rice, which has a long season. The problem I face in farming is that during drought, there is no water. I have to look for water, buy or fetch it from far to water the vegetables. The cloud conditions also affect the cabbages, and I make losses.
Farmers are adapting to climate change in different ways.
I use locally made manure from poultry and animal wastes for my vegetables to grow healthy. Because if you don't put manure, you'll not get what you want. I visited one farm called Katenda Arambe Rural Urban Training Center, and I learned how to harvest water. I bought a tank, and during the times of drought, I do not suffer because I have water to irrigate my crops. I have also planted trees in my garden.
The struggle to adapt to climate change is not only a problem to individual farmers, but also requires government and international efforts. For Uganda to escape the looming climate change catastrophe,
Farmers need knowledge and skills on how to adapt to climate change. This will help them apply better farming methods that will contribute to increased productivity. However, more emphasis is required on preserving the environment and creating awareness on other adaptation measures such as greenhouse farming, irrigation, water harvesting, and proper use of pesticides.
On Wings, you're hearing coverage of Women and Climate Change by Lila Ndakiri from Uganda's Radio Mama FM. She took part in community radio broadcasts from the Marrakesh Climate Summit. Here's Wings narrator Gryna Delaney.
While new forms of sustainable farming in the face of climate devastation is a clear and obvious goal, here Lila interviews Sonia Roshink on global green and healthy hospitals and their role in mitigation of climate change.
The healthcare industry has a critical role to play in climate change mitigation. Global Green and Health Hospitals, GGH, is a network that brings together hospitals, health systems and health organizations from around the world under the shared goal of reducing the environmental footprint of the health sector and contributing to improved public and environmental health. Sonia Roshnik, the Executive Director, Global Green and Health Hospitals, says that healthcare should be more creating and not damaging health with its environmental footprint.
I'm Sonia Roshnik and I'm a non-executive director for Healthcare Without Harm based in Europe. We would like healthcare really to be more creating of health rather than damaging health because of its environmental footprint. So we're also calling on all health professionals to take a role in what they might do about this. You know, they're caring for their patients, but they can care for the planet at the same time. That's quite an important message. We think that if they were able to speak with a louder voice, people would listen, might recycle more, look after their waste better, sort out their energy efficiency. So there's a lot to be done. I think in Africa we've got some great examples where there might be clinics who haven't had any energy at all, and with having renewable energy it means that they actually can have access to energy and be much more resilient in the face of climate change. So, you know, we're demonstrating really that you can not only adapt to climate change, but you can mitigate against some of the carbon emissions and actually have a much better solution for everybody. So it's good for health, it's good for the environment, you know, and it's good for the people in the community. So that's what we're trying to promote, and we've got some great examples around Africa to illustrate that. I mean, I know in Rwanda, where there's a lot of the hospitals and the clinics are being fed with renewable energy, with solar power. There's also cold chains that are being used through solar energy to make sure that we're keeping the temperature cold of, you know, vaccines as they travel from place to place without having to use electricity. It makes them much more flexible, more resilient, cleaner. It means that we're not polluting the environment, and we're trying to, you know, strengthen the capacity of the health systems. So we are trying to work a lot with, you know, medical professionals as well as all the people who work in the states and facilities and buildings and who look after the environmental footprint, because the doctors have a huge role to play. They are the ones who are prescribing medicines, who know, who can influence what their patients might do. So a lot of the medical associations are starting to take this seriously. They're starting to say that they, you know, that if we don't look after the environment, it's going to impact on health, and that also as a health sector, we've also got our own responsibility to improve the environment. I think there's a lot of doctors and nurses who are not as aware of it as they should be. So we've still got our work cut out to try and, you know, bring them along with us to do a lot more. And I think, you know, events like COP22 here in Marrakesh are excellent to try and help promote that. We've just come out of a meeting with the Ministers of Health and Ministers of Environment, you know, where they've just declared that they're going to work together to start raising awareness even more and start acting together on a program of work. So we think the momentum is there, and we just need to build it and scale it up everywhere now.
With the launch of the 2020 Healthcare Climate Challenge at the Paris Climate Conference in 2015, the GGH network is increasingly working to mobilize healthcare to reduce its own carbon footprint, become more climate resilient, and exert leadership to help every society transition to a low carbon energy future.
Oh, I'm Lucille Dufour. I'm coming from Climate Action Network France, which is an organization fighting for climate action and climate justice in France. So basically we're here today because we defend climate justice, and we think that climate action is urgent and it must happen now in Marrakesh at COP22. can see that there are impacts of climate change everywhere, especially in Africa. So we really want that countries and also people realize that it's urgent to address these impacts of climate change.
You are listening to Wings with coverage of COP22 from Climate Radio in November 2016 in Marrakesh, Morocco. Interviews and presentation by Nagira Lila of Mama FM Uganda. Here is the continuation of Lila interviewing Lakshmi Puri, UN Women Deputy Executive Director, during a live broadcast from COP22.
We want all stakeholders, including youth, young women and men, and UN, civil society, the gender and women and gender constituency has been working very hard, but the climate change civil society must also join forces so that we come up with a very strong gender action plan, which then gets reflected at all levels, at the regional level, sub-regional level, national level. And we also want the national adaptation programs, the nationally determined contributions, to reflect. Right now, I think only about 60 out of 148 reflect gender equality considerations. But we want all of them to really mainstream women's concerns, as well as support to women, targeting women as leaders and playing a strong role. Because as I say, this is about climate justice being combined with gender justice. Without gender justice, you can't get climate justice. So we are really pushing for not only planet 50-50 by 2030, but we are pressing for a climate 50-50 here and now.
Here? Okay, we are expecting more from that. Madam Puri, please tell us some of the programs UN Women is having supporting women.
Yes, we have three climate-related flagship programs which are geared towards women's economic empowerment. You know, women's economic empowerment builds resilience like nothing else does in developing countries. And therefore, we have a program that is linked to energy, sustainable energy. So it's sustainable energy and women's entrepreneurship. There is a program on climate smart agriculture and women's role in it. And there is a program on the inequality of risk, climate risk. You know, it affects women differentially. The risks for women are greater, and how we can mitigate that risk, targeting women actors. So these are the three major gender programs. And just to give you an example, on the sustainable energy and women's economic empowerment, we have a program in India, which we just launched with the partnership of the government of India, with the government contributing, then DFID of United Kingdom contributing, and UN Women. So it's a tripartite partnership, and it is to be undertaken. It's a program for decentralized renewable energy being generated and women entrepreneurs being part of generating and spreading the use of that energy in their communities. And we hope to create 100,000 women entrepreneurs in the energy, renewable energy sector. So that's one. We also are doing a project or program on climate smart agriculture in Mali, working with thousands of women to help those who are, you know that in Africa, women are the backbone of the agricultural system. And yet they are the least resourced, and they suffer the effects of desertification, water shortages, changes in weather pattern, and yet they are not supported. So how can we help them? Again, work, you know, and it's a not only a source of food security for them, but it's also a question of livelihood. So how can we support them in a way that they undertake agriculture and engage in agriculture in a climate smart way and reduce the risk? So these are some of the examples that we are trying to demonstrate and develop as models which can then be scaled up and replicated in many countries. We are catalysts as UN, but the government has to really invest in it, buy into the ideas and the theory of change that we seek to bring about. So that's the first partner. The second partner in this, for example, in the India program, we also have a private sector partner, Citibank. They are there to support, also bring their networks of financing to bear on that. Also bring their some of the tools, including communication tools, training tools into the program. Then we have civil society, women's organizations, self-help groups. You know, they have so much wisdom and resource and experience that is so valuable to drive any project to success. It is also important to have the media supporting us and advocating, and that's why it's so important to have radio. So we use community radios in many countries to reach out and give our messages on these programs. The other partner, of course, we are now very much working with men and boys, and we have the He for She program. You must have all heard about the campaign, and we invite young men in particular to come forward and become champions of the solidarity movement for gender equality. We also work with community leaders and traditional leaders, because that's really important. If we are talking about two kinds of changes, we are talking about climate change, combating climate change, and a certain consumption and production pattern, changing that, that's a big transition, and then changing the patriarchy and patriarchal systems that breed inequality, discrimination, and violence against women. So we are trying to change both these. So for that, we need to have faith leaders, traditional leaders, also supporting this agenda. So we are working with all these partners to make sure that we combine gender justice and climate justice.
UN Women Deputy Executive Director Lakshmi Puri was interviewed by Nagira Laila for climateradio.net at COP22 in Marrakesh, Morocco. This is Gronya Delaney for Wings in Amsterdam.
The editor for this episode was Mindy Ran. Audio content courtesy of AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit facebook.com/wingsradio. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.